Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
Carlos Rojas serves as the Chief Governmental Relations Officer for the Kern County Superintendent of Schools. In that role, Carlos advocates for the best educational services that can be found on behalf of the office and students of Kern County. This dynamic position and the energy that Carlos brings to his work is evident to all who collaborate with him. When not serving in his role as the Chief Governmental Relations Officer, Carlos finds time for his wife, Erin, and his three children, Jonah, 28, Serena, 23, and Samantha, 21. Beyond his family, Carlos is a talented musician and plays the bass guitar with a local band that performs in various spots around Kern County. We had an opportunity to sit with Carlos on May 3, 2024, to ask him what he has learned so far in his relatively new role and to ask him about life in Sacramento, working with the legislature. We think you will learn a great deal by listening to this conversation. Carlos, thank you for taking the time this morning to meet with us. It's a privilege. And I wanted our education community to know about your work. So why don't we start with you telling us just a little bit about yourself and your background in education?
Sure. Well, thanks for the opportunity, Bob. Like most things in my life, Bob, I didn't take a direct path to education. Lots of twists and turns along the way. So when I graduated high school, my dream was to play music for a living. And I thought I was going to do that for a long time. And then packed up a U-Haul truck with some friends and moved to New York City and realized after that 1 year of being there that it was difficult to make ends meet. I wasn't good enough, so I was trying to think of something different to do. So I went back home to South Florida and went back to college, started college actually. And in doing that, just had a passion for sports as well. So I wanted to be involved in education and athletics at the high school level. And so started teaching back in the late 90s. In South Florida, actually started teaching in Georgia, actually, when I went to college. And then when I moved to California, looking for a job in education, I was asked to submit my application at the County Office of Education. So I did that, and the way luck would have it, I got a phone call from the principal of our alternative education program. And I had never heard of what that was before, but I took the job because I needed a job, and I went and worked as a substitute teacher for a week there and fell in love with the program, fell in love with the kids, and here I am 24 years later still with the county office.
So tell me, Carlos, what led you to your current role as Chief Government Relations Officer for the Kern County Superintendent of Schools?
Yeah, so I like to think that we make plans and then God laughs at our plans. And that's kind of what happened with this role. I had never been politically inclined. It was never a big interest of mine to be involved in politics. And I would probably describe myself prior to this role as a political skeptic. So I was in education. I was teaching. I was a school administrator. And a couple of years ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago now, our superintendent at the time, Dr. Mary Barlow, invited me out to have lunch. And I thought I was in trouble because she never invited me out to lunch. But we went out to have lunch. And in that conversation, she threw out some job opportunities that might be available in the coming months from that point and at our office. And she mentioned this governmental relations job. And again, I had no previous interest or desire. I wasn't seeking a job like this. But I just really appreciated Mary's willingness to see something in myself that I didn't see. And when the opportunity presented itself, I thought it'd be a great thing to try out and see how it goes.
Wonderful. So what do you like most about this role?
Well, you know, I think being in education for 24 years, now 25 years, my favorite thing about education as a whole is impacting kids' lives. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but it truly is the heart of why I went into the education. And when I was asked about this role, I started thinking about and questioning how much will I really be able to do that in a government relations job. But what I've learned over the past couple of years of doing this is you really have a great opportunity to impact kids' lives at a grander level across the state. Not as direct as I envision my career being with kids, but it definitely is a great opportunity to impact legislation that ultimately impacts what happens in the classrooms for our kids. And that's just a huge honor and privilege to be a part of that.
I think it's terrific that you have the experience behind you of being in the classroom with kids, particularly in a role like alternative ed. And so when you see legislation that comes across your desk, you have that firsthand experience and you can really read between the lines and understand better probably what that legislation ultimately might do.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. As I was entering this job, I had a lot of doubts about my ability to do it, but I kept getting a lot of reinforcements and encouragement because of my experience as an educator. And I think it definitely has brought some value to the position. It's interesting. There's two strengths I think you should have in this role. You should have some experience as an educator, but you should also be pretty wise and privy to the political landscape of how things work. And so I think I have one of those from my 20 years of experience and plus in education, but the steep learning curve for me has been the political side of it, and how do you balance and maneuver through political landscape that you have to up there in Sacramento. I've been very thankful and relied heavily on my experience as a teacher, as an administrator, as I have advocated for or against different bills that would impact our kids. And I think it's been valuable. Hopefully it's been valuable to our kids here in Kern County.
For some, Carlos, the political landscape and the current environment, the current age we live, might seem a little bit discouraging. Have you had that reaction to it, or do you feel encouraged by some of the things that you are involved in?
Very timely question, Bob. So just about 2 weeks ago, I'll answer your question this way, kind of with a short story, if that's okay. There is a bill that was authored recently that would have really changed the way schools should address students who are on campus, in possession of, under the influence of controlled substances. And this bill would have initially eliminated suspension and expulsion as a consequence for those actions. Now, what I'm very proud of is here in Kern County, as many counties across the state do, is we're advocates for kids. And the goal is never to get a kid out of school. However, when you consider the safety of everybody involved, the child under the influence, the kids around them, the staff around them, sometimes it may be appropriate to remove the kid from campus for a limited amount of time. So suspensions and expulsions in certain situations may be appropriate. So in the working on that bill, Kern County, we were the only educational agency in opposition of that bill. And again, we weren't in opposition of the additional resources it was asking schools to provide to those kids. We were opposed to the elimination of some of the options that districts have to deal with those sometimes very dangerous situations. So we submitted our letter of opposition, and really, because we knew we were the only one submitting that, we didn't have much hope that it's gonna get much traction. To my surprise, and I'm so encouraged and thankful for, the following day we got an email from the chair of the Assembly Education Committee with some new proposed amendments that would have answered or responded to a lot of the concerns that we had in our letter. And we are so thankful for that. We agreed to the amendments. We were supportive of them. He shared the amendments with the author of the bill. The author accepted the amendments. And so we were able to, a week later, when the bill was heard in committee, to go in there and let them know that we were removing our opposition from the bill. So very encouraging. There are times where politics trump policy, which is a term or a phrase you hear up there a lot. That's discouraging at times. But I really feel strongly that the majority, the legislature up there and the administration do have positive and good interests and intentions for all of our kids.
That's a great illustrative story, I think, Carlos, of how sometimes things work the right way, and just by persistence and a clear, articulate argument, which I'm sure you're tremendous at doing, wins the day. So thanks for sharing that with us.
You bet.
So this is interesting to me, Carlos, and I think it'll be interesting to our listeners. Can you kind of go through a primer? Let's do a little civics lesson here and just talk about how a piece of legislation gets started and what step-by-step process it goes through to get to the governor's desk. I think I'm very interested in that, and I think our listeners will be too.
Sure. It's going to be a very abbreviated, because if we went through every step, we'd be here for a day and a half. But yeah, it's a great question, and I think there needs to be some raised level of awareness of how this happens, because I think the general public is not really familiar with that and the opportunities we have in the general public to impact legislation. So the way it really starts, Bob, someone has an idea, and that idea typically, more often than not, comes from someone other than the legislature. Could be special interest groups, could be just a member of the community, and you bring that idea to a legislator who has interest in that idea and that initiative, and then what they do is that goes to legislative council. They will draft the bill in the legal terms that's required, and then once that bill is introduced, if it starts in the Senate, it's obviously introduced in the Senate floor, and same thing in the Assembly. And then once the bill is introduced, it has to be in print for 30 days before it can be heard in a policy committee. Bills will then get assigned to different policy committees depending on the subject of the bill. And if the bill has any fiscal implications, it will also be assigned to an appropriations committee after it gets through policy, if it gets through a policy committee. But along that way, what happens over and over again as bills get amended, bills get reviewed, and as even sometimes before they're heard in committee, different lobbyists like myself or other advocacy groups will be aware of a bill, and they will work with the author of the bill and the sponsors of the bill to have it amended to make more sense for their interests. But essentially, the bill has to get through a policy committee first. If it has a fiscal implication, which 99% of them do, it will go to a appropriations committee, and if it gets through that committee, then it will go to the floor of the House where it was introduced. And if it gets past that floor, the floor of the House, then it will go through the same process in the other House. So if a bill starts in the Senate, it goes through the policy committee, appropriations committee, Senate floor. If it gets through that, then it does the same exact process in the Assembly side, and vice versa for bills that are introduced in the Assembly.
So, Carlos, typically, what time of year do you see bills being introduced for consideration in that session of the legislature?
Yeah, so there's a really short window, actually. The window of bills being introduced is typically from January 1 or whenever the legislative session begins, in the beginning of January, usually the first week of January. And you have until typically somewhere in late February, early March for bills to be introduced. That's really the short window of time there for bills to be introduced.
If a bill is not introduced in that time frame, then an individual is waiting till the next year to have their idea heard and vented.
Correct. And every legislative session, Bob, is a two-year legislative session. So any bill right now we're in the second of a two-year legislative cycle, and any bill that does not get out within those 2 years would have to start the whole process all over again the third year, the next year.
And how do we identify the current legislative session? Is it the 23 through 25 leg session that we're
Correct.
In?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. So in the current legislative session, Carlos, can you identify or are there a few key challenges that you're seeing right now that the education community would want to be mindful of?
Yeah, definitely. It's more of a theme than it is in a specific bill. But what we're starting to see happen, and I'm not saying it's completely wrong or we're completely opposed to it, but I think, well, let me kind of tell you what it is, and we can talk about it from there. I think there is a sense from the legislature and the state administration that local control is not working the way they hoped it would in terms of resulting in improved student outcomes. Now, hard to argue with that because we have not seen student outcomes improve the way we would hope we had would see them. But we've also had a pandemic that we've gone through. We've had lots of challenges within the education world that factor into whether or not students are improving academically. So I think one of the things that we're trying to combat and educate the administration on and the legislature on is that the answer to improving student outcomes is not necessarily taking away local control and increasing state oversight. In fact, we would argue that that's going to be detrimental to student outcomes. And the reason I say that is because, you know, Kern County, that's a great, we're a great example. We're a very unique county when you compare us to other counties across the state, when you look at demographics, student needs, student poverty, parent education levels. We have a county that's 8,000 square miles in area, but we have most of our population concentrated in Bakersfield. So we have very small rural districts who have very, very unique needs. So the people who can best determine what is in the best interest of those kids in those rural communities, for example, are those local school boards. They know more about what those kids and families need, more so than the legislature in Sacramento does. So we have always been advocates here in Kern County of local control, and making sure that those decisions are really in the hands of the local people who understand the challenges that those kids face.
Right. So the mindset being to make the argument and influence legislatures to retain local control as much as possible. And is there any current legislation that you know of, Carlos, that is particularly threatening that local control argument?
There's several. There are several bills that don't call it out specifically as threatening local control, but there are several bills and several budget initiatives that are creating what's called categorical programs. And categorical programs are what we moved away from back in 2013. Categorical programs allocate the same amount of money to every district across the state with some significant strings and regulations that tie to those funds that handcuff districts' ability to implement those programs. A great example of that, Bob, is Proposition 28, which was just passed, I think it was 1-2 years ago. And it's a bill that, it's a proposition that is intended to improve and increase arts and music programs in our schools, which is a great idea, phenomenal idea, and a great need for our kids. The challenge has been, and it has been for every colleague I have spoken with across the state, is the implementation of those funds, because there's a strict supplement, don't supplant restriction with those funds. And I just spoke with a district of ours yesterday who has been funding a couple of different arts and music teachers with their general fund prior to Proposition 28. Those funds have now decreased, and they have to now reduce staffing potentially. And they're not allowed to use the additional funding that has come through Proposition 28 to keep that program going. They would have to create a whole new position, hire a new teacher. It's a different process that really, again, handcuffs the ability of districts to properly implement.
And as I understand it, Carlos, from reading the headlines, the state of California is faced with some real budget challenges this coming year. And can you speak to that at all in terms of how that's going to impact your efforts up in Sacramento to see maybe some programs on the books that you'd like to see or not? But just in general, how do you see that impacting your work?
Sure. Yeah, it's a big problem, Bob, and it is going to impact education. I will acknowledge and let you know how grateful we are in the education community that so far in the since the governor released his January budget proposal and any conversations that have been had since then, Proposition 98, which is what funds K-12 education for the most part, is at this point pretty much unscathed in the plans for the budget for 24-25 that have been released so far. Now, by May 14th, we will have a May revise, and that may look different by then. We're not sure yet. All that to say, though, even in its current form, one of the greatest areas of need in education in California is school facility funding. And there have been some great reports done by the Public Policy Institute of California and others that identify the dollars needed to just keep schools' facilities up to par. This is not grand improvements. This is just keeping them safe for our kids. And it's in the multi-billions of dollars. there is a bill, AB 247, that would put a $14 billion school facilities bond on the ballot in November for the voters to vote on. There is optimism that that measure does get placed on the ballot. However, because of the budget shortfall that we're facing in California, the total bonding capacity in terms of dollars for the state of California is limited right now, based on what the governor said recently, somewhere between $15 and $16 billion. This school facilities bond in and of itself is asking for $14 billion, but you also have other competing initiatives like water storage, housing, climate resilience, a lot of different bonding priorities are competing with school facilities. So yeah, the budget shortfall is definitely going to have an impact on the education community. I would say though, up to this point so far, as far as what we know now, education compared to other industries is doing pretty well in terms of being protected from significant impacts.
Yeah, and the example you gave is just again illustrative of some of the challenges that you face in your work, and particularly, you know, with respect to education. So I thank you for that, Carlos. So as we wrap it up here, Carlos, I wanted to ask you, what can we do as a community? By that I mean citizens, educators, students. Is there anything we can do or be more mindful of to assist you with your work?
I think one of the biggest eye-opening things for me, Bob, since I've started doing this work, because as I mentioned earlier, I wasn't very politically inclined prior to doing this work. My eyes have really been opened to how much opportunity is available for the general public to impact legislation, and how few of us are aware of it, and even those that are aware of it do much about it. So I would just say the more that our community can be educated on the legislative process, I would encourage everyone, as they learn about it, to continue to get involved. Reach out to your local representatives. Let them know what the challenges are. Let them know what the positive things are as well. And if there are challenges, have some solutions in mind that you can offer to our representatives. They are trying to appease a lot of different people with a lot of different priorities. So they're not experts on every aspect of our community. So, and education definitely is not typically a priority for our legislators in terms of their background and their knowledge, a depth of knowledge. So the more we can inform our representatives here in Kern County, the better chance we have to better serve and advocate for our kids. So yeah, just get involved as much as you can when it comes to legislation. Be aware, make sure you vote, and make sure your voice is heard, because it's really critical. And seems like to me a small population of California is making the decisions for the grand population of California, where it really should be a little more evenly spread out.
Well, Carlos, you're obviously the perfect guy to be representing the Kern County Superintendent of Schools up there in Sacramento, and we appreciate everything that you do. I know it means time away from your family. You spend a lot of time up in Sacramento, and that's a sacrifice that is not unnoticed, I'm sure, by the office and others. So thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you for the time today and articulating so well about your efforts, and we just appreciate you and your efforts on behalf of Kern County children.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Bob. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the Property and Liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.